past, we've relied heavily on our veteran presence in the clubhouse. But, you know, this is a lot of responsibilities. I'm the manager here. It starts with me. And as I just have said so many times, I don't care who's not here. There are no excuses here. These are Major League Baseball players. I don't care where they came from. I don't care how they got here. The names on their back and on the front of their uniforms say they're a Major League Baseball player. It starts with them. And when you come and when you owe what you do, you owe a responsibility to the fans, our fan base, the organization, and to yourself, the respect for this game to come out and grind it out, whether it's hot or whether it's freezing cold. And that's where it's got to start. And I don't care. I know hitting's hard. Believe me. That's why you guys are sitting there and there and there. If it was easy, we'd be watching you guys play. It's not easy. But there's a way they got here because they grind out at bats. That's how they got here because that's how this organization's been built in the last few years. So we know it's possible. And yes, some guys are having a bad time. And woe, you cannot say woe is me at this level. You cannot do it. Everybody's too good here. Nobody feels sorry for you because everybody's been humbled. And those who get out of it stay here a long time. Those who don't, you keep looking up and they keep getting a little time here and a little time there, but they don't stay. I want the ones who can stay. It's my responsibility. You know what? I write the lineup every day. I get it. I totally get it. I'm the one who decides who comes in to pitch. You know what? Hey, look, that's my job. And I'll stand up and be accountable. That's what I do. You know what? But I know one thing. There's got to be a passion to come and play. There's got to be a sense of, you know, this is what I do for a living. The people that pay to see me play are going to see my best effort. Now, we're going to get our ass beat again. Don't ever mistake it, because that's part of the game here. You're going to get beat, and you're going to get beat bad sometimes. But you need to pick yourself up and move on. And that's what baseball players do. That's why the guys who are 0 for 10, just like Neil Walker, you know, what is he, 2 for 30, and you look up and he's raised his batting average 30 points. Because he grounded, he got back, and got after it. Anybody see what he did there on a fly ball left field where he ended up? Past second base. That's how you play the game. Not throw your hands up, stop at first, at the 45-foot line. You play the game correctly. And we're all responsible, every single one of us. The coaches, me, the player, we're all in this together. There's no one guy to blame. There's no one guy to point a finger at. I don't do that. I have never done that. Never. I am a team guy. I believe in team, just as you guys do. You write a bad story, it's about the paper. It's about where you came from. Everybody's in it. And I believe that. Today's game, it's going to happen again. But I know one thing. Starting tomorrow, we're back fresh. Starting tomorrow, we're going to get after it here. And those who don't want to get after it, I will find somebody else who does. Because in Las Vegas, there's a whole clubhouse full of guys who want to sit in this room. And I'll find them. That's all I got to say. I'm done.
Hey, Dune Met fans, welcome to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel the Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arizzi. The opening of today's show featured a clip of Terry Collins from August 11, 2016, when TC sent a direct message to his players following a 9-0 defeat at the hands of the Arizona Diamondbacks, dropping their season record to a mediocre 58-58. After Terry's tirade, the team went on to finish 27-13 the rest of the way, making the postseason for the second year in a row. That was 10 years ago. Considering that this 2026 New York Mets have been in an historic early season freefall, limping home from a winless road trip, an 11-game losing streak, and have not won a game since April the 7th. Does this team need that type of message Terry Collins delivered to that 2016 team? Does Carlos Mendoza, David Wright, Steve Cohen, or all three need to light a fire under these players? Would it even help? Right now, with the state of the team, the precarious spot Carlos Mendoza is in, and all this reconstruction that was done to the ball club, what can be done? Well, we're going to discuss it all with Terry Collins and special guest WFAN's Evan Roberts, and SNY's Sal Licata. So we have a big one for you today. On part two of a special talking with TC, Laura Albanese and Terry discuss him deciding to become a big league manager and his journey getting there. We'll have a new Never Forget story with Bobby Valentine, Johnny Franco, and Todd Zeal coming up later as well, and a special heartwarming story about David Wright told by the captain himself. We'll bring on Dom from Coaches Collectibles to let you know how you can watch a game this week with former Mets Rey Ordóñez and Edgardo Alfonso, as well as get some great signed items from Howie Rose. But let's get right to the leadoff. On today's leadoff, Terry and I welcome two of the most vocal media personalities and diehard Met fans there is. Evan Roberts is the co-host of New York's WFAN Midday Show with Tiki Roberts, the Evan and Tiki Show. He also hosts the wildly popular Rico Bronya, and he actually recorded a therapy session from the roof of WFAN early this morning. Got a chance to see that. Joining Evan and TC, the host of SNY's Baseball Night in New York, as well as the Sal Licata Show on all podcast platforms. Mr. Sal Licata. Gentlemen, great to have you all together here on the Terry Collins Show. Welcome, everybody.
What's up? Life is good, right? Aren't we happy as Met fans? Sal, you in a good mood over there?
I did not think it was going to be, when I agreed to do this, I did not think it was going to be under these circumstances. We're in a little bit of trouble here, 11th Street.
Yeah. And initially, I was going to just have you guys on because Terry, I wasn't scheduled to record with him till next week. But with everything that has gone on and Terry doing some media interviews and the fact that you two gentlemen were going to come on, I was like, TC, please, can you come on and be the voice of reason and maybe talk us all off the ledge right now? Terry, please talk us off the ledge.
Well, you know, first of all, the easiest thing to do is go back 2 years ago when they were floundering and ended up putting it all together and, you know, getting to the playoffs. So, you know, and it's a tough time. I mean, 11 in a row is it's high. And make no mistake about it, I am not in the clubhouse. I have talked to Carlos. I did give him a call just to say, hey, look, you got to don't change. Don't, you know, got to be the same guy. But, you know, it's tough, but it's, again, a long, long, long way to go. And you look up and I looked at their homestand coming up and I'm thinking, no, these are the teams you got to beat. I mean, these are the teams that you go out and you have a good home stand, and all of a sudden everybody takes a sigh of relief. So I think it's got to start this week for sure. And they're, you know, they say they're going to get Soto back, which is going to be a big part of it. But yeah, this has been tough to watch.
I would have to concur. It has been very tough to watch, but the feeling that I have right now, I don't know the other guys when you're watching, it's really not even anger anymore watching this unfold. And I haven't seen a stretch like this, at least early in the season, ever. And I've been following the Mets for 60 years. We started off the show today in the open playing that post-game press conference from August the 11th of 2016. And the Mets had dropped a 9-0 to the Arizona Diamondbacks. The record then was, I think, 58-58. And then after that, direct message to the players in a very emotional way, straight to the point, the team went on, turned it around, went 27-13 the rest of the way. And I'll get everybody's opinion. Do you think it's time for either David Stearns, Carlos Mendoza, Steve Cohen to have this direct message to these guys or something very forceful like, what are we doing? What can we be? What can happen? I would like to get Terry. Do you think this is needed? And I'd like to get Evan and Sal to also talk about what does this team need to get that kick in the ass that maybe Terry helped execute with his guys back in 2016.
Go ahead, Evan. Go ahead, Sal. You can lead it off.
First of all, you were a fiery personality, and so that's like right. You were you. Carlos Mendoza is not that. So Carlos Mendoza doing an impression of Terry Collins isn't going to work. Carlos Mendoza doing an impression of any other fiery manager isn't going to work. And I hate to say it because, you know, it's depressing when you call for someone's job and it isn't Carlos Mendoza's fault necessarily. The roster may not have been built well. The players are underperforming. But honestly, I think they should change the manager. And I like Carlos, but I think you've got to try something. And I feel like as Met fans, we've probably done this a lot where we've said, we got to change the manager. I don't think I ever did it with you, Terry, to be honest with you. I probably criticized your moves, but I don't think there was ever a moment where I honestly thought they need a new voice. And it kind of feels like they need to try something. And so I don't think it's Mendy acting differently. I don't think it's Mendy being more fiery. I think it's almost changing it up, and it sucks to do that because I think we all like Carlos. Carlos is a great dude. And again, it's not mostly his fault, even though the decision to not walk Nico Horner was embarrassingly bad. I'm not firing him over that, but this is a results business. And I remember when they fired Willie Randolph, even though it was done in such an uncouth way, middle of the night, California, it actually kind of worked. Jerry Manuel and the Mets, there was a spark there for a while. So I hate to say it, and I don't know if you guys agree, but I'd put Mendy out of his misery, and I would change the voice, and I would do it right now.
First off, I'm calling bullshit. There's no way you didn't want TC out. I guarantee you I could find a tape of you calling for TC's job. That's number one. Number two, the Willie Randolph thing was a lot different. Willie was the architect of an all-time collapse. So now you have that collapse hanging over you. The first time anything goes wrong, that's what they're going to do is change the manager. Carlos Mendoza authored one of the great comebacks in Mets history when they were awful in 2024, a team that I said was dead to rights. They were 0-5. I swore that they would never see 500 again. Not only did they see 500, they got to the NLCS. So to me, he isn't the problem. Also, who's gonna take over that they have right now? So there is no better answer for me than Mendoza. And just because you need to change things, and I agree that they need to change things, it doesn't mean that that would be the smart move long term. Carlos Mendoza is a proven baseball guy. He's been proven in New York. I think he is an asset to this team, and I don't think he needs to change who he is. What I think needs to happen, and TC, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you this. Is this something that he, as the manager, needs to get these players to wake their asses up, or is this something that has to be policed within that clubhouse? Because I firmly believe that there are chemistry issues, whether it is a new group trying to gel, whether it is the Lindor, Soto, locker room dynamic, is that something that Mendy can step in and fix himself or try and fix himself? Or is that on the players to write that whole thing themselves?
Well, you know, I think it's twofold. Number one, I think the manager can have a say in it. And I do believe it, a lot of it comes from the players. You know, you've seen in the past, and I was never a big believer in this, but the players-only meetings, You know. Hey, look, if you got something to say, you can say it in front of the coaching staff and the manager. You know, this is a big boy business. And, you know, as you know, when you're managing, you're going to take criticism. So if the player's got a complaint, let it out. Let's get it out. But my whole thing when I watch him play, you know, the game has changed so much that there's no two strike approaches. There's no put the ball in play. No, productive. Let's move runners along anymore. And so. I think, you know, and obviously they're feeling the pressure. So, you know, and I know Mendy's trying to relax. And I read the story where they had the music going yesterday before the game was starting and trying to make sure everything's the same. It's not the same. It's not the same. I mean, there is a sense of urgency. And that's where, when I managed, hey, look, I felt that. You know, hey, look, guys, this is a serious business here. You know, you want to have fun? Win some games. You know, let's go out and start playing better and things change. But you just can't. This is not a time. And even though it is very, very early, I just think you got to. And I think talking to Carlos, I mean, this guy's, you know, he may come off as a low key guy. He's a passionate guy. Make no mistake about it. So I think he's tried things already. He's tried to change the lineup. He's tried to change some different roles and do some different things. So he's trying to get him going. But it is one ultimately. Look, they got to play better. They got to pitch better, and they got to play better.
But wasn't there a lot of pressure put on him as well? Listen, they fired his entire coaching staff in the offseason. Then they reconstruct the team and rebuild this team and bring all these new players who have never played before. And even though, you know, spring training was a couple of months away and everybody had this optimistic viewpoint, how difficult is that as a skipper, Terry, that your entire coaching staff – gets the axe, and then your team core is disassembled, and then new guys come in that don't even have a chemistry with each other. How difficult is that?
That's hard. First of all, losing all those coaches, you know, they're the same guys that 2 years ago did a brilliant job. And so, you know, to blame the coaches, to put it all on the coaches, I didn't think was fair. But, you know, again, I'm not there, so I don't know. But I can tell you, you know, when you have a new bunch in spring training, it's got to be a little different kind of a spring training. You know, you've got to get them to blend and get them to know each other and get them to feel how what each other can do. But, you know, anytime you go through a tough time, there's a sense that somebody's got to step up. And you end up, you have guys that, hey, look, I got to do more. I got to swing harder. I got, you know, they take it upon themselves. I got to be the guy that gets us out of this. And that's not how you get out of it. It takes all 26 guys to get on that same side of that rope and pull. And so, you know, I think that if they, again, the word patience, and it's hard to say when you've lost 11 in a row, but you know, it is, you know, they can turn it and get it going. But it takes every guy on the team to go back and do what they do best and not try to do more than what their abilities dictate. And so the minute, you know, you try to be a home run hitter, when you're not a home run hitter, you're going to fail. And you know, that's just the nature of the game.
But think about what you said, and this is why, unfortunately, it will fall on Mendy. They changed the coaching staff, and they changed the core roster off of a collapse last year. I know it was a different kind of collapse than the Willie collapse, Sal, but it was a collapse, right? Whatever you want to call it, it was. And they changed everything but him. And that's why I look at this bad start, and I wonder, I don't know how he survives that when you changed the core of the roster and you took away all his coaches, and now it's worse than it ever was. That's why, fair or not, I think it is going to fall on him.
He won't survive it, assuming that they continue to lose this. You're right, but that doesn't mean that it's the right thing to do. And then guess what?
Is it ever the right thing to do, though, Sal? Think about this. When they fire a manager, is it ever right? Was it ever right to fire Joe Girardi? Was it right? It's never right. It's just something that you do to try to kind of save a season.
I think with Girardi, they got to a point where it was clear that they needed to make a change, and they ended up getting better for it. I don't think that this is clearly on the manager. This is on the players. Like, if you ask me what I'd rather do, I'd rather change Francisco Lindor. I wanted to trade him in the offseason, and they didn't do it. And how about now? Now looking at it, and it's not just a knock on Lindor and his performance. He's been way worse than anybody could imagine. But to me, that's more impactful than anything the manager has done, where it's been 2 years with Mendoza. One great, one not so good, and now you're saying because of the bad start, he's not the guy? Who's the better answer? You think Stearns deserves to pick another manager? What makes you think David Stearns should get to select another manager where he took a blowtorch to this team and it's been god-awful through the first 20 games? So are we evaluating on a 20-game sample, or are we going to let this thing play out? And if we do let it play out, find me a better baseball guy right now than Carlos Mendoza to manage the New York Mets.
You know, I mean, the answer. You know the answer. You know, there's a guy, and you know who it is.
Who? Who do you have in mind?
Come on. I want to make you guess it.
outside of TC, I don't want anybody. Honestly,
it's Carlos Beltran. And it always was Carlos Beltran. Come on, what? He was the guy. He was the guy they hired. And because the Wilpons, you know, basically listened to whatever the commissioner told them, they got rid of. He's a smart baseball guy. Everybody in that room would respect him. And look, there's no perfect answer because players need to play better. You guys are right about that. I am not disputing that they can continue to play. Like Bo Bichette, who was automatic with runners in scoring position, and he comes up on Sunday with a runner on third and less than two outs and can't drive the run in. So obviously guys need to be better. But if you're looking for an alternative, that would be the answer. And sometimes you just got to try stuff when things are going bad.
You think he's ready, TC, if he had to take over? I know you're very close with Beltran. That's why I would just go right to you and ask you. You think he's ready to handle this situation?
Well, I will tell you what, guys, and I really like Carlos Mendoza. I think he's done a really good job. But if you had to do something, Carlos Beltran would be my pick because he's a sharp guy, you know, and all of a sudden you take a guy who in July is going to need some days off because he's got a plaque going up. That's going to get some people's attention for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be the one issue. That's the issue I run into. Like, do we give him a couple of off days to go into the Hall of Fame? But he was ready to do the job. He should have gotten the opportunity to do the job. He wanted to do the job. And there's a respect factor that he has as soon as he walks into that room. And he understands what it's like to get booed. He understands what it's like to be a baby and say, I'm not going out for a curtain call. He has an understanding of this town and the way we act as maniacs that very other few people do.
He's also never managed before. And I like Beltran. And I trust TC. He's never done it. And now he's going to do it in New York under the most dire of circumstances.
Did Mendy do it before he got the chance?
He was a bench coach under Boone for years. He's a baseball lifer. I mean, Carlos Mendoza is a baseball lifer the way TC worked his ass.
What's Beltran? What's bad? He's not a baseball lifer now?
I'm talking about managing, and I think that there would be a difference in actually doing before. Look, I would root for Beltran. I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world. I'm just saying that I think the Mets have an asset in Carlos Mendoza. Also, this would not be the situation I would throw a rookie manager into, a team that's lost 11 straight, however bad it's going to get here. Yeah, here you go, Carlos. Be the savior for this, Carlos Beltran. Be the savior for this disaster of a team.
Wow. We're all here because...
Jenna, just get out of the way and let us go. Will you?
It's fun. It's fun. I knew this was going to happen. That's why I was so like, this is going to be so cool, because I know you guys have different opinions as well. So this is great. I love it. But we're all kind of here because of the deconstruction of this team and the getting rid of, you know, I know Evan doesn't like to mention the one guy's name that's in Baltimore. But we don't have a first baseman right now. And we, you know, we certainly have lost an amazing amount of players that were kind of heritage players, homegrown players, and replaced them with guys that have really failed up to this point. So it's really not on Mendoza when we look at it. It's really not his fault what's going on. It's it points to a guy that's running baseball operations on the roster construction of this team. So, you know, what do you guys think about that? I mean, is it, I'd like to get your opinions on it, you know?
Even though it's not his fault, we can agree on this. I don't believe it's Mendoza's fault, but eventually some change has to happen. So I'm not going to yell and scream. I think it's stupid, but eventually they're going to have to make a change, and that's one of the easiest things to change. But I would say, like, TC, at what point do we evaluate players here, right? You could, it hasn't worked so far. Yeah, it's been 21 games. Over the course of 162, that is nothing. The problem is it's been so bad and snowballed to such a point where it's everybody's under the magnifying glass, which I think makes everything even worse. Fans were booing and rabid after the first six games, let alone 20, and it's only getting worse and worse and worse. But is it a fair sample size to say that Stearns moves, all these moves that he made in the offseason, have been bad after 20 games?
To be honest, Sal, no, it's not fair. I mean, but that's the nature of the beast in New York, is that's reality. You know, the old saying, you know, perception is, you know, it's reality to people. And the perception was this team was supposed to be really, really, really good. And they're not right now. And so, you know, they're going to hear it. So, you know, I don't know a lot. I don't know much about Polanco. I mean, at Bo Bichette, I saw him when he was a young guy. It's the last time I really saw him play very long, very much. So, but, you know, and I look at what's going on with Francisco Lindor, and I think he, because of a lot of the chatter going in about being the captain, now there's going to be no captain, I think this guy is under a ton of pressure. Some of the mistakes that they're talking about he making, he's never done those things before. So I think he's taken upon himself to, hey, look, and all of a sudden now his mind's scrambled. Just go play, man. Be the great player you are. You know, when we made David Wright the captain, it wasn't anything about giving speeches. It was about how he prepared to play the game and how he played the game. I wanted him to lead by example and nothing more. And, you know, and have that voice. And I think Francisco is that voice in the clubhouse, because, again, when it's all said and done, Sal, and you guys, you and Evan are the perfect examples. If you called Francisco Lindor up, he'd talk to you, because he knows that's his job, that's his role. And I think there's been, with Soto out, and Juan's not a big, you know, PR guy like Francisco is, but so he's always there. And I think right now he's just got a ton of heat on him and pressure that he's the go-to guy, and it's going to start with him playing better. And I think it's, you know, he's such a good player that just got to get him. And I think, I'm sure that's what Mendy's telling him. Hey, look, just go play. Just go be the shortstop. Do what you do best. Don't worry about all the other stuff. And try to take a little bit of that outside pressure away from him if you can.
And that's a part of where they miss the guys they let go.
Right.
Nimmo and Alonso played every game. They posted, as the kids like to say, and they were always there and they were reliable. And I'm going to be fair about this. I didn't like losing Alonzo. I didn't like the Nimmo Simeon trade. 22 games is not fair. So I'm not spiking the football in David Stearns' face. That's ridiculous. Things can work out differently. A part of why they didn't want to keep Pete was the five-year contract. We're not going to know the answer in year one. Same thing with the back end of Nimmo's deal. But here's what they've lost. And it's not just the emotional attachment fans had. They lost the reliability. They replaced the reliability of Brandon Nimmo and Pete Alonso with guys whose track records are not reliable. Jorge Polanco had a great year last year. What about the year before, the year before, and the year before? I'll tell you, he didn't play. He missed a lot of time. So to act surprised that he's hurt right now would be disingenuous to his career. Marcus Simeon looks like he's declining. I hope he doesn't. I hope he has a renaissance. But the numbers over the last 3 years are showing a declining player. So where I think they're really missing the core guys, it's not just from the fans missing him or them. It's the reliability. A part of what made Pete and Brandon so good is they went out there and they played every game. They were not perfect. I'm not going to recreate the past. Brandon Nimmo's strikeout against the Nationals on that Saturday night in September still haunts me. It was the biggest at-bat of the year last year, and he struck out when all they needed was good contact, and they would have won a game that could have changed their season. So I'm not trying to tell you they're perfect, but I think what they miss, and it goes to what you said, Terry, about the pressure on Francisco, those guys would relieve that pressure. And they're not there. And I think it's making Lindor's job much more difficult.
But also it's also magnified because Bichette's not doing his job.
Yeah.
Because correct. Stearns relied on, okay, well, if Polanco does get hurt, well, guess what? We have Beatty and Vientos. And guess what? Those guys have been awful as well.
It's, you're right.
Well, Carson Benge, what we expect? Carson Benge hasn't done it. Like, everyone down the line, almost every single one of Stearns' plans has been X right out of the gate. So even though there was some insurance, I'm like, well, I like Polanco, and if he doesn't play, well, okay, you could survive with Beatty and Vientos for a little bit. Also, let's not forget, I know we brought it up a couple times, without Juan Soto, it's all even way worse. Yeah. Soto is the key to it. He's the guy who's been durable, and he's not there. So now you take him out, and you got Polanco who's hurt, and you got Vientos and Beatty who haven't done anything, and Bench hasn't done anything, and Bichette can't do anything. yeah, let's fire the manager, though, and that's going to solve everything. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but don't frame it that way. Because
again, and I understand, but I mean, I saw something the other day, and I did not see the game. I didn't pay. You know, I was probably out playing golf, but I read the paper where, you know, there was a game where Robert didn't play, and yet he wasn't available at all.
I mean,
it's just a big one, man. Come on, have you ever heard that before? I mean, and so, you know, where did that decision, hey, look, we can't use this guy at all. I will tell you, there were days, and again, I was really lucky, but there were days when I didn't play David Wright, I needed a day off, or Granderson, or Kadai, or you, in the seventh inning, those guys were in the cage getting ready to pitch in case they had to pinch hit. I looked down the bench a couple of times, and there's Juan Uribe, got his bat ready, he's got his helmet on, and he's not in the game, but he's ready to go in the game. And here's a situation where you have this talented, talented guy who cannot be used at all, and he's not hurt. I'm telling you, that absolutely flabbergasted me. I don't understand that. That I don't get.
Yeah, they're protecting him because they don't want to. They preemptively are trying to keep him healthy. But I agree with you. And the fact that the season is spiraling, it felt even more important to use that bullet. I think the way Mendy phrased it was he could only use the bullet to pinch hit, but he couldn't stay in and play the field, which also doesn't make sense. So the medics are telling him he can't play center field for an inning, but he could take one at bat. The whole thing didn't make a lot of sense.
It's also part of a flawed plan. That's a flawed roster plan. You're going to get a center fielder who, by the way, I liked the acquisition because I thought it was better than anything they had, but there are limitations there. And then you combine those limitations with Polanco, with relying on Vientos and Beatty and Bench. What'd you think was going to happen? Once one thing went wrong, it fell apart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's you know, this is the frustrations of, you know, a town that is passionate about the game. And yeah, it's 22 games, got a long way to go. But, you know, I've been there, and I know the importance of keeping the energy up, keeping the energy in the city up. So, you know, hopefully, like I said, I think this is a huge homestand for him. Huge.
Yeah. And TC, I was shocked to learn, like, I know that the Mets have had bad teams and losing streaks or whatever. Shocked to learn that they have not lost 11 straight or 10 straight since 2004. And I'm thinking, the first thing I thought of, well, God, all those teams that you had with basically no talent during rebuild years in 2012 and 13 specifically, never have had that type of losing streak. Think of how bad that is. You had lineups with John Mayberry Jr. I know we joke about this, hitting cleanup, and you still found a way to win a game here or there. That's why I think that it's more than just the talent or even the guys posting. It's more than that. Something. The Rockies beat the Dodgers two games in a row, and the Mets can't win one game. Even the bad teams find a way to win a game. How the hell do you lose 11 in a row? Like, it's beyond anger. It's embarrassing that this happens to the Mets, of course, in a year with the expectations that they have.
It is. And TC, I want to bring up basically what you just touched upon. Mendoza, he's, you know, these decisions, you can't use this guy. This guy's got to be off today. He can't play the field. Did that ever happen to you back in the day where you were told what to do? I didn't think it would, but I just wanted to hear it from you. It's like, what can Mendoza be going through when he's getting just analytics, and he can't really manage from the gut?
Well, you know, and again, that's where the game is at today. I talked to a couple of managers that, you know, before the game starts, they're saying, I'll never forget, in a World Series game, there was a manager who was told if you used a certain pitcher, they could only throw 13 pitches. How do you even come up with that number? Why didn't you say 15? I mean, 13. So he said, well, obviously I can't use the guy, period. You know, because what if the guy has a 14 pitch at bat, you know, which that happens once in a while. I can't take him out. So, you know, it's just, I mean, and that's where, you know, again, that's where I look at Carlos, and I know, you know, I'm sure he'd probably say, God, I mean, you know, I know I can't use Robert, but there's going to be a time in that eighth inning where he's going to be the guy that got a chance to win this game, you know, and there were times when I remember one time when Seth had a bad leg and he couldn't play. He was in the batting cage getting ready to play hit. I mean, even though, you know, if he hit the ball, he couldn't run to first, but at least I had him. You know, he's getting ready to play. And this is, you know, I'm just sometimes, you know, I feel bad for Mendy because a lot of times your hands are tied in the way the game's played today.
Very true. Terry, you're beloved by the fans on social media. There's been post after post after post. We need TC. We need TC. We need TC. Please come back. People are pleading on the Instagram page, everywhere you look. And I know that's unrealistic, obviously. I mean, you're playing golf. You're enjoying your life down there in Florida and doing, you know, things that make you happy. And, of course, baseball did for many years. You're a lifer. But talk to the Met fans directly. You know, kind of just give them like something to like, hey, this is TC. You guys know me. You love me. And this is what I advise Met fans right now.
Well, again, I was there. You know, I was on some team, not just managing, but, you know, I was coaching in Pittsburgh in 93 after we lost Barry and Doug Drabeck left and Andy was hurt. And we were really struggling. And yet, you know what? The guys – you know, I remember Jim Leland talking about, hey, look, there's some of these guys shouldn't be here, but you got to treat them like they got to believe they're big league players. And so you've got these young guys and they're out there and they're right now. This is a tough time. When you got young players, you can't let them accept this. And that's, you know, when, you know, some of my rants at the post game, I didn't want the players to accept the fact that hey, look, we got to turn this around. You're big league players. That uniform you wear is a major league uniform. So go play like big leaguers. We may lose. We may still hang a slider, but, you know, play the game right, do the fundamentals right, hit cutoff men, throw to the right bases, you know, limit outs on the other side of the field, all those things that are important. So, you know, and again, here we are, not even May yet, and we're calling for people's heads. You know, June 1st, if it's still ugly, okay, you know, now you're going to start trading guys away anyway because, you know, you don't want to – the other teams are going to be coming begging for some of the players on this team. So, you know, again, try to have a little patience and you know, because when they get that big horse back, I think things are going to change.
All right. Well, we really appreciate everybody's time here today. I know, Evan, you go on the air with Tiki in a few minutes.
Are the Mets going to see 500 again? I want to know if Sal and Terry think we're seeing 500 ever again.
Let's hear
it. Be honest with me.
I believe they are. Yeah. You know, I like their starting pitching. I like Peralta a lot. I like McClain a lot. You know, I think the other guys are going to come out. You know, and guys, I've said this and I'm hoarse talking about it. You know, Senga, let him do what he does. Let him, you know, again, I always say, let him be Japanese. Let him go through a bunch of pitches between starts. You know, you're trying to protect this guy because he's got a 5 or 6 year deal. How's it going so far? You know, let him be who he is because he's got good stuff. I'm telling you, he's got good stuff. I remember Bobby Valentine told me when I went to Japan, he said, these guys do things you're not going to like, but it works for them. And that's, you know, and that's what makes him, that's what makes him good. And so let him do what he does. Let him be himself and not try to take away the workload. Those guys love to work. I kind of like the rotation, and that's where it's going to start. You know, you've got to let them get in deeper in some games. And again, I think when Juan gets back, the lineup will start clicking a little bit because these guys do have track record, some of these guys. But they got a lot of young guys who got to learn how to play. And I think it's very, very important for them to understand that this is not acceptable and that, hey, look, you know, it's got to be better. I think they'll get back to 500, yes.
I think this homestand will define the season. I've been as patient as I could. I got a lot of texts yesterday. That's it. I'm done. And normally it's inherent in me to say the same thing. Like, enough of this team. You had to get all win in Chicago. I thought they'd win the Saturday game behind Peralta. He didn't do enough. Obviously the bats didn't do enough. I'm going to just hold out one more week or week and a half. These 9 games, minimum 6-3. Really, it should be 7-2. But Soto back. At home, after the off day, maybe they make minor changes, whatever it may be, but Soto back, and you have the soft schedule here. If they don't go 6-3 minimum over these 9, I'm done with this team. So to answer your question, I still believe that this will be a team that will legitimately compete for a playoff spot, which, by the way, is not even good enough, but that's the bare minimum. So, yes, I still think they'll get to 500, but I'm giving them the next 9 games. If they don't go 6-3 over 9, it's over.
This homestand is as important of an April homestand as I ever could remember, honestly, because I think you're right. I think if this goes badly, it is going to spiral even worse, but they have a chance. Like, you go 6-3, all of a sudden you're 5 games under 500. It's like, all right, you're chipping away from the awful stretch that they just had.
I agree. Guys, I absolutely agree with that. I think this is a huge homestand.
Well, we'll see what happens after the 9 days, and we all hope for the best. Gentlemen, I want to thank you all for being here today, and we appreciate it very, very much. It's going to be a very interesting week for Met fans.
Thank you. Have a good show. Sal, we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
All right. See you guys later. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
A great lively discussion with Evan Roberts, Sal Licata, and our own TC here at the show. It was very cool getting everybody together, and it's something that Met fans really need to hear, and getting TC to give his opinions. And of course, Evan and Sal are always off the chart. So we appreciate everybody who was on that leadoff with us. And we want to tell you right now about Tunnel of Towers. Each week, they do amazing things. I was very fortunate last week to be at the presentation of 3 homes that they delivered to wounded vets right here in Franklin, Tennessee. And it was an amazing event, and I was so happy to be there. We'll share some pictures with you as we keep talking about Tunnel of Towers and the amazing things that they're doing each and every day. For example, I just talked about the triple smart home dedication to 3 of those America's greatest heroes. Those men were all catastrophically injured while serving their country. Tunnel of Towers built each one of them a smart home on a neighboring lot right here in Franklin, Tennessee. The Tennessee 3, as they're known, have built in support systems and can help each other's families as well. Those homes are all next to each other. So it was an amazing thing to be a part of and to witness those 3 vets getting their homes. And of course, this is what Tunnel to Towers does. And you can learn more by going to t2t.org. And over 8 days in April, Tunnel to Towers broke ground on 2 new veterans' villages. The facilities in Jacksonville and on Long Island will provide stable housing and supportive services for veteran struggles with homelessness. This is part of the Tunnel to Towers commitment to eradicate all homelessness for vets. Similar veterans' villages are being built around the country, and you could do your part by donating just $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. And in order to keep its promise to never forget 9/11, Tunnel to Towers is undertaking an historic Steel Across America tour. The foundation will be bringing in an artifact from the rubble of the World Trade Center on a trip from New York to California and back, with 40 stops in between. The massive 16,000-pound steel beam was recovered from the Twin Towers. This tour will allow people across the country to see history close up. Your $11 a month will allow Tunnel to Towers to continue to do good. For more information, once again, go to T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. And we will be back with part two of the special Talking with TC with our correspondent, Mets beat writer for Newsday, Laura Albanese. And today she'll discuss with Terry his decision to become a manager and how that journey began and how it became a reality. That's coming up right after this word on behalf of the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
On Memorial Day, during a special pregame ceremony at Citi Field, Army Sergeant Major Daniel Hendricks was surprised with a special announcement by the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
Daniel is receiving the keys to his very own mortgage-free smart home.
For Sergeant Major Hendricks, the gift of an accessible home is truly life-changing and a powerful reminder of how we can honor those who have given so much for our freedom. Go to T2T.org for more information.
So, I mean, like, those first couple of years managing, I mean, what was that like for you? I'm guessing it wasn't hugely profitable. I'm guessing it wasn't always easy.
I didn't make any money for a lot of years.
So, yeah.
But it was a passion.
Yeah.
It was the love of my life, and that was what I wanted to do. So, you know, my first year, we won the California League. We were finished, I think, in our division last in the first half, and that was when Fernando Valenzuela was on the cusp of being a star and the screwball. And so the great Jim Brewer, who was a great Dodger pitcher who threw a screwball, came to Lodi because he was going to teach the screwball. And he saw my team play and he said, well, we're going to scrap the screwball. What we're going to do first is teach these guys to throw strikes with their fastballs. And I used it 50 years later, the same statement. You learn how to command your fastball first. And once you do that, the rest of the stuff will come.
Yeah.
And we won. We end up winning the second half, won the championship. And the next year, they moved me to Vero Beach in the Florida State League. Had Sid Fernandez on my team, and you know, we got beat by the Yankees in the playoffs. But again, we had, you know, because my teams played the game right.
Was there anything that you learned about yourself, or those early lessons of being a manager that you kind of like carried through your career?
Well, there's a ton, but, you know, it's who I was. I demanded a lot of myself.
Yeah.
One of the things, you know, when I trained my team to get ready for a game and we didn't play well, I thought it was my fault.
Yeah.
That I didn't get them ready. And so a lot of times I beat myself up over it. And I've had guys tell me, hey, look, you know, losing is going to be part of it. You're never going to win all your games, but as long as I thought we were prepared to play and went about things, that I was okay getting beat. But yeah. It's when we didn't play the right, we missed cutoffs, and you know, you didn't back up a base, or you know, didn't move a runner along. That to me was my responsibility.
Right, because you're supposed to teach these guys to do everything.
To do it right.
To do it right.
And that's for years. And I, you know, and I wanted to win.
Yeah.
And I wanted to win bad. And I always Al Campanis, the general manager of the Dodgers one year, he told me, he said, quit worrying about winning so much. And I said, well, what I'm trying to do is produce winning type players.
Yeah.
And if you learn how to win in the minor leagues and you do the things that you win in the minor leagues, and I know talent's the most important thing, but if you play the game the way it's supposed to, when you get to the big leagues, you're going to help the Dodgers win. And that's all I cared about.
Has there ever been a player that you could see that impact in a profound way? Like a guy that maybe in the beginning was not working or not doing things, but then kind of like came around to the idea? Because sometimes you have super talented players who don't necessarily go about things the right way.
Oh boy, that's a tough one. That'd be going way back to, but I had, you know, I was really lucky, because one of the things Walter Alston told me about managing, he said, you will find that your players will take on your personality if you do it the right way.
Yeah.
And so I kind of thought that's how my team went about things, you know. And I had some great guys. I had really some talented guys, but I also had some guys who loved to play.
Yeah.
And those were the, you know, those are those extra guys that you have, especially at the minor leagues, that, you know, if you're going to win, those guys play in the minor leagues. You know, you only had 21 guys and 10 of them were pitchers. So, you know, everybody had to play.
Yeah. So, you're in the minor leagues. You finally get your first major league job. How did that come about?
Well, I was with the Dodgers for a number of years, and I managed the first AAA All-Star game in Buffalo, New York.
Okay.
So the owner of the team in Buffalo was at Bob Rich was trying to actually, they were talking about trying to get a major league franchise. So they were promoting their team quite a bit. So Bob was there when I gave the speech to the AAA All-Stars, the National League team, and he thought, that's the guy I want managing my team. So the Pirates called, and I took the job to go manage in Buffalo after being in with the Dodgers
for
23
years.
What was
in the speech?
I don't remember, but Bob liked it.
Okay.
So I got to Buffalo, and that's where I met Jim Leland.
Okay.
With the Pirates. And Jim had a similar, you know, experience with the Tigers. You know, Sparky was the manager of the Tigers, and Jim was their AAA manager, and there was no spots for him. And so Tony La Russa took him to Chicago, and Jim wanted to be a Tiger forever, as I thought I'd be a Dodger forever. The best thing I did was to get to meet him. And so 1 year, and I don't remember exactly what year, but they locked the players out in the beginning of spring training.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran the spring training for the Pirates, and Jim was in camp. And when they brought the players back, Jim came to me one day. He said, "Look, I don't make promises to anybody, but the next job on my staff is going to be yours." And the next year, Gene Lamont got the job with the White Sox, and Jim took me to the big leagues.
What was that working in relationship like, and just that relationship with Jim Leland?
The greatest.
How did that form you?
The greatest. I learned so much from him, how to handle players, and the biggest thing, Laura, and you're sitting right here. When I got to the major leagues with Jim, he called me in the office. He said, "Here's your job. You're going to throw batting practice to Bonds, Benia, and Van Slyke.
Mm-hmm.
Then when the game's over, I want you to sit over in that corner over there every night and listen to what the sports writers, when they come in, what the questions they ask and how I answer them. Not that you have to answer them like I do,
right,
but you need to learn the questions that you're going to face." And I did it every single night for 3 years.
All right, so how did you learn to deal with the menaces that are the media?
Through him.
Through him, yeah.
Honest.
Yeah.
Answered every question. Didn't attack anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he used to tell me, he said, there's be some questions that don't make much sense because it'll be a young reporter that really doesn't know baseball. Treat him like, he said, you treat every single reporter as if he's the sports editor for the New York Times. Never forgot it. Remembered it to this day. And so when I got to New York, I dealt with the sports.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a true story. There's a guy named Tyler Kepner.
I know Tyler, yeah.
So Tyler Kepner was a beat guy when I was the manager with the Angels. He was with one of the newspapers out in California. And sure enough, a few years later, I get the job in New York, and Tyler Kepner's reporting for the New York Times.
And you kind of establish those relationships.
Exactly.
Throughout.
And, you know, you treat people with respect.
Yeah.
Again, I've told every reporter I've ever dealt with, you're allowed to have an opinion. That's, you know, that's fine. Just don't tell a lie.
Yes.
Don't make something up that's not true. You know, and that's my only issue. You're allowed to have, there's lots of times when game's over, I've said, you know, maybe I should have did that. But has never been a time during a game where you don't think of all your options. Hey, I could do this, I can do this, or I can do this. And now you got to formulate something to say, okay, I really think this is my best opportunity.
Yeah.
That's where that bench coach, your pitching coach all come into play. You know, you listen to opinions. There's probably guys a lot smarter than me. I know there is, but I use my people. I'm a big people guy. I think, you know, you hire good coaches and you use them, you let them do their job, and then you formulate what the best plan is for your team.
So I was looking, I know you managed the Astros, then you had the Angels and then the Mets. I mean, what among those three teams, I mean, what's the highlight of your career? What are the things that you look back on and kind of like, okay, this is something that I'm going to remember forever?
My first game in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
My first was my team. I'm standing you know, on the first baseline in Houston, Texas, and saying to myself, it's all been worth it. Yeah. All the bus rides, all the winter balls, all the instructional leagues, everything I ever did along the way, it's paid off. This has paid off. And so that was huge for me. You know, and then obviously standing on the third baseline in Kansas City during the World Series. I mean, that's the ultimate goal of every kid who's ever played baseball in his backyard was to be a part of a World Series. And here I am, my team playing in a World Series. Can't get better than that.
I mean, was there ever a time where you were like, you know, you've been counted out a few times in your life in terms of, okay, maybe he's a little bit undersized to be a baseball player. You know, he has to start from the beginning to become be a manager. Was there ever a time you doubted yourself that you'd be able to do it?
No. Because when you know, when you came to come through the minor leagues, and that's the thing, I managed an A ball, I managed in Double A, I managed 9 years in Triple A, I managed winter ball, we won the Caribbean Series when I was in the Dominican. I had major league players, stars, George Bell, Tony Fernandez, Jose Rijo. I mean, we had great players that you've got to deal with these guys, and I remember I had a manager tell me one time, don't ever forget, everybody wants to be led at some time, okay?
Yeah.
Even though they're talented, even though they're great players, they want someone to help them. And if you can be that guy, if you can be there when that happens, and so that's how I approach managing. I just, there were times, you had to take your, had to forget about your ego and everybody else's. And so I think all of those experiences in winter ball, when I finally got to the big leagues, I thought I could deal with these guys.
Yeah. And so like after the Angels, you went to Japan, right? What led to that decision and just how did that form you? What was that experience like?
Well, it was the minor league. I got the job to run the minor leagues for the Dodgers, which I loved. And I was also the field coordinator. So I had two jobs, but I had great assistants in Los Angeles. It took care of all the office stuff. So I got to go out and watch the players, and that's when, at that particular time, Bobby Valentine was managing in Japan, Trey Hillman was managing in Japan, Marty Brown was managing in Japan, and so we had an international scouting department, and the guy who ran it, A.C. Kurogi, came to me and he said, there's a Japanese team that's looking for an American manager, and they would like to talk to you. And I said, all right, I'll talk to them. So I flew to Japan. I was in the instructional league, running the instructional league for the Dodgers. And I flew to Japan and interviewed with them one night at dinner. And they offered me the job at the end of dinner. And I said, I'll call you in a couple of days. They said, no, we need to know right now. Now.
Your entire life,
right
just like that?
Right now.
What did you do?
So we talked about a contract and took the job and came home and finished the instructional league and a month later, flew back to Japan.
What, just the immersion into this new culture, what was that like for you? Because we always talk about ball players who come in here and they have to, immerse themselves, and that's hard. But as a manager from the United States going to Japan, like, what's that like?
Well, I went, so in Japan, every fall they have a camp, and I think it starts November 1st.
Okay.
And so I went over there November 1st and watched the players, saw what they could do, how they go about things, watched how they trained. Talked to Bobby, called Bobby. He gave me some tremendous information about, hey, look, don't try to change too much. Mm-hmm. This is how they do it. And I got to tell you, it works. He said a lot of it works for them. And so, I watched and I wanted to change a few things and how we approached the game and how some of the things were done. But that's why they asked me to come over there. And so that was really an eye-opening experience. And to this day, it's one of the things that's kind of always been kind of surprised at with with Bobby and I, we've been over there. And so on, the Japanese players are starting to come over here and nobody ever asks our opinion of them.
You think they would.
Because I know how they prepare in Japan to play.
Yeah.
And one of the things they do is they work hard. And if you cut their workload down, they don't think they're ready to do things sometimes. So, but it's, it was a great experience and I loved being over there, but it was time to come back.
Yeah. Did you learn Japanese?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Okay.
Bobby took Japanese. He was, he could speak it.
I've heard Bobby speak Japanese. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. He took, and I should have also, but I had an interpreter who was, I thought he slept outside my hotel room all the time.
So you talk about just the managerial experience of doing it in Japan, but just living there, what was that like?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah,
it's great. It's a great culture, great food, very respectful, very clean. It's incredible. They could dig up a sidewalk and you'd never see any dirt. Damn. It's gone.
Yeah.
And it's fixed. It gets fixed now. And so that stuff I love. They travel right. They treated their players great. Great fan bases everywhere. Beautiful ballparks. So it was fun.
A great inside look at the career of Terry Collins with Laura Albanese and TC. And we'll have future installments coming up right here on the program. And now another installment of our Never Forget series featuring the stories of those who experienced the tragedy of the September 11th attacks. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation documentary, Never Forget How Baseball Helped Heal New York, is currently airing on the streaming service Fox Nation. Each week this season on our show, we hear from those ballplayers, front office personnel, broadcasters, or reporters on their personal 9/11 story. 25 years later, we must all never forget that tragic day. And on this week's Never Forget, we hear from former Mets manager Bobby Valentine, Mets Hall of Famer Johnny Franco, and Mets analyst and former player Todd Zeal on the origins of wearing first responder hats after the 9/11 attacks. And directly after that, a special story with the captain, David Wright, on his growing up in a first responder household and his support for Tunnel to Towers. Let's go to that right now.
About the third time of practice, I went and asked the guys, hey, guys, want to go down? I mean, it's part of your life and your history. And I know the people down there would really like to see you. And so Jay got a bunch of hats and gear together spontaneously. We didn't call down and get an appointment. We're coming down to ground zero, right? We went out to the police. We filled up a van, one of the police vans, and we went down. And one of the guys that was coming out recognized, I think, Todd Zeal.
And, it was soon after that interaction, one of the early interactions where I, traded a hat to a police officer for a Mets hat. And I thought I'd wear it, in workout and stuff. And then when we talked about it collectively, we thought, hey, we should see if we can get hats from the others. And the club was in full support, and we ordered them before we were able to take the field in Pittsburgh. And it wasn't just fire department and NYPD. We also, Port Authority and the sanitation department. We had hats for everybody that was, sort of down there.
And I remember before the game, Todd Zeal was our player rep, and we got a call from the commissioner's office saying we can't wear those hats. And to a man, because they said they were going to fine us. So we told them, let them fine us. Let the commissioner come down and take the hats off our heads ourselves, because we're not taking them off.
I still, to this day, get, guys that tell me that that was one of the greatest things to them that came out of that that period, in having the Mets sort of really stand for New York and the guys that were and girls that were sacrificed and sacrificing their time and energy to try to rebuild the city. So, we've gotten very, very positive feedback even, 20 plus years later. So I think it meant more to them than maybe we knew, because it meant a lot to us. I think we felt like we were the ones proud to be wearing the hats and not the reverse.
I'm David Wright, former New York Mets third baseman. and I support the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. My father was in the Army Reserves and then went on to work his way up the Norfolk Police Department to assistant chief. At the time, growing up, didn't quite know the challenges or the risks or the dangers of the job, but now that I have kids of my own, I certainly appreciate his service, the dedication to the craft, and obviously serving the community. Because I grew up in a household with a police officer as a father, I see firsthand the impact that these men and women make on their communities. Each year of my career, you know, we would go visit different firehouses. And to hear the stories firsthand from coworkers, friends, brothers, sisters that had lost a family member in 9/11, it's an incredible feeling to hear the stories, although incredibly sad, but just the way their mind works and the mindset of a true hero running towards the problem and not away from it. We should do what we can to help the first responders, because it's very easy to overlook the work that they do on a daily basis until you actually really need them. And again, they'll be the first ones there to help. So it's nice to be able to reciprocate that and to help them as much as we can.
This newly renovated smart home marks a fresh start in the lives of those who deserve it the most.
I think it's incredibly important to support Tunnel to Towers. I've seen firsthand the great work they do helping our firefighters, our police, and our soldiers and their families. T2T is asking for your support for these brave men and women. Just $11 a month will go a long way and make a big difference. Let's go Mets, and let's help Tunnel to Towers. Go to t2t.org to find out more. Let's do good together.
Heartwarming story from David Wright. We'll feature another Never Forget story next week on the show. And a reminder, you can watch the one-hour documentary on how baseball helped heal New York on Fox Nation. Well, Coach's Collectibles is your go-to source for guaranteed 100% authentic and unique sports memorabilia. Right now, let's bring on our friend Dom from Coach's Collectibles and check in on some upcoming events. Hey, Dom, how you doing?
John, how are you? Thanks for having me again.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, obviously things are busy for you as they always are. And we've been having fun with this partnership of ours. This has been really, really cool for the fans to get some really cool stuff from you.
Yeah, I think it's been great. I think it's been really fun to just kind of come up with ideas and concepts to do for the Terry Collins Show. And I love that we're also raising money for Tunnel to Towers at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a wonderful foundation. Through the connection you made with us and Hojo's going to be featured in a Tunnel of Towers PSA upcoming right here at the Baseball Academy, which I could walk to from my front door. So it's all good. We want to thank you for that. But you got some really cool events coming up. So let's talk about that. I know you had a big watch along with Edgardo Alfonso and Ray Ordonez. And that's coming up this Friday, not Saturday, Friday.
Yep, this Friday night. So we're doing them Friday night over at Bullsmith Tavern in Smithtown. Friday night Met game, 7:00. Edgardo Alfonso, Ray Ordonez, both there together, doing photo ops during commercial breaks and just hanging with the fans, talking baseball. I mean, those guys are great. And when they're together, they're like such a good energy because they just they're buddies for decades, you know. And they rip on each other and they know how to have fun and they're great to be around. I've known them for quite a few years and they're a lot of fun. So we have them Friday night. We just had Dwight Gooden there a couple weeks ago, and he was great. I mean, there's a video that I caught of him showing like a kid how to hold his curveball and how to throw it and how to spin the ball the right way. And it was like a minute and a half long video that he spent with this one kid just showing him like, hey, this is how you hold the ball. This is how you hold the curveball. This is how you practice in your room and start getting muscle memory in your hand. And then he was showing him, and then he goes, all right, now you do it. And the kid grabbed the ball and he held it. He's like, no, move your fingers here, you know, separate these a little bit more. It was awesome. I got to send it to you. I mean, Dwight does that every time I'm with him. He finds some kid and spends time trying to show him something cool. And I just always say to myself, like, I look at the parents, I'm like, you better tell your kid like what he's getting right here. You know, that's serious baseball knowledge that's coming through.
And that's great advice from somebody who is one of the best in the game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So these watch-alongs are, you know, becoming frequent for you. I mean, the doc one you've done, you've been doing them for a while now. And what can a fan expect when they decide to go to a watch-along with these guys? I mean, talk us through what that atmosphere is when the fans have this opportunity.
So the whole party is a ton of fun. The idea and the concept is that, you know, we're trying to bring the watch the game in your living room at home instead of being by yourself experience of just relaxing and watching a game. But now you have a pro athlete there with you, a former player of the team, guy who maybe played with some of the guys that potentially, because we've done some guys that aren't, you know, 80s and 90s guys. We've done some guys that just retired and had games and they know some of the players on there. And it's just to bring a more, instead of an autograph signing where it's like, you know, you're sitting in front of the guy for 10 to 12 seconds when they sign your piece, they say thank you, shake hands, goodbye and good luck. It's much more approachable. The guys are approachable. You can come up and ask a question. You can hang out. You can watch you can watch something with them. They give some insight on something that may have happened. And it's just a more personal experience. I think the experience of it all is great too. And all the guys do photos with the fans, and we try to do it during commercial breaks or any sort of breaks, because at the same time, like, it's a watch party. We want to watch the game that we're watching. So I know everyone's always eager to kind of get that picture in, but we don't go anywhere. We're there for the most of the game, if not the entirety. And it's a cool just experience versus just seeing a guy in an autograph signing for a few seconds. Watching the reaction, like we did one last year with John Starks for the Knicks playoff game, and watching John's reaction to like a big three-pointer and just him getting up and cheering. And it's like, he's a fan just like we are, you know, and just having that experience of the guys being excited or being fans of it from that fan perspective, you know, as a former player, it's a surreal, very cool experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's casual and it's very relaxed, and you get a chance to hang out with some of the guys that you remember from some of the wonderful things they've done in the game. And this Ordonez and Edgardo Alfonso should be a real good event taking place Friday at Bullsmith's Tavern, Long Island. What time the doors open for everybody to get there this week?
The bar is open all day. They open at noon. Yeah. They're over there for lunch. The game's at 7. So I know reservations are being taken and made. I'm not sure if they're full yet or what, but if it's a nice evening, they have a beautiful outdoor area too, and the TV and the sound on outside too. So it's open all day. You can get there whenever you want. A lot of people go from happy hour and just hang out.
Yeah. But if you want a reservation for the Bullsmith's Tavern event, they are located at 155 West Main Street in Smithtown. Reservations, I'll give a number, 631-652-6030 for reservations for Friday's event. But you also, you're working on dates and you're working on events with some other people. Are some of the other things that you got coming up when it comes to this watch along?
So we're doing, we have Howie Rose coming into the office in the next week or so. I just have to call him and just figure out a day that works kind of best for us for a private autograph signing, because we've just been, the demand on the Howie Rose stuff has been great. And people are just, especially him announcing his retirement, everyone's been gobbled up all my inventory. So I just told him it's time to kind of restock some stuff. And then I'm planning on bringing him out at some point for a watch party as well. He's a little bit easier to schedule now because he's not doing any of the road games. And he's only, I think he said he was only doing like 70 or 60 or something like that total games on the year, but he's around for all of the travel schedule now. So it's a little bit better there. And then off the Mets topic, we're doing some watch parties this week with a couple of the former New York Knicks for the playoffs. So Thursday night, I'll have Larry Johnson at Bullsmith's Tavern as well. Thursday night, I'll also have Chris Childs at Borelli's in Long Beach. So at the same time, two different locations on Long Island with two different athletes. And then Saturday, I'll have Chris Childs at Side Street Dive in Patchogue. So he'll be doing game 4 there. So we've just got a jam-packed week. And then Saturday, we also, off the Mets topic a little bit, we have Mike Richter up in Utica doing a public signing. So I'll be up there with him on Saturday, come right back and shoot straight out to Patchogue for Chris Childs. And the Knicks are great right now. The Mets, we need to start to come around and get them excited, but they're going to come. It's a long season. It's, you know, we're what, 20 games in. I'm very confident that once the lineup is, you know, secured and some guys get back in, we'll be all right.
I hope so. I mean, your lips to God's ears, believe me. I've never seen anything like it. But I want to touch upon the Howie private signing, because I know these are questions that fans probably ask. And of course, go to CoachesCollectiblesNewYork.com for everything. Mm-hmm. And I'll, you know, we'll promote your socials before we're done. But the Howie Rose thing, fans participate by going to your site. There's a number of items there. Or is it a we want an autograph ball or an autograph microphone?
Yes.
Are these things personal? Can they get them personalized, or is it all generic?
They can get anything they want. So all of our signings usually have some sort of send-in opportunity as well. So we like to personally handle all the send-in questions that we get. So instead of just putting a link on the website where it just says, hey, pre-order a Howie Rose baseball, and then you fill in what you need or whatever. I don't like that. I like people to message us and say, hey, I'm looking to get a Howie Rose baseball. I want it signed to John. And I'll say, no problem, you know, because there's different ways of doing things. You want everything on a sweet spot. You want to John, let's go Mets. Do you want to John best wishes? We want to make it exactly what you want. You don't have to personalize it. Some people, most of the people are just ordering, you know, Howie Rose, put it in the books. And in some cases where I already have the item in stock, they've asked me for something that I already own. I'm like, hey, just if you don't want to wait, just go on the website and buy one. You know, we have it already. So we're able to push them to stuff that we already have. But if it's something we don't, like we're out of stock on our – we do these mini microphones with the broadcasters that are really popular. We're currently out of stock on Howie. So that's something that he's going to restock. But, you know, people have asked – you know, we usually have them signed in two colors. I'll have Howie sign it in blue and then, right, put it in the books in orange to keep that Mets theme. But some people are like, hey, can I have it all in blue? Can I have it all in orange? Whatever you want. So that's the type of – that's the reason we like to kind of take – it's a lot more work on my end, you know, to obviously handle all these orders and questions personally. But it gets – it ensures that we – that as a consumer, you get exactly what you wanted. And there's no gray area of, all right, this is what they put on the website. How do we interpret it? I don't want to do that. You know, I just want to know exactly what you want. We'll get it done exactly the way you want it, and we'll get it to you so that you're happy.
Cool. Anything else that you could at least tease to the listeners and watchers of the show that you may have coming up?
I would say next. Yeah, to tease. We are going to have, I won't name a name yet, but we're going to have another former 1986 Met doing a watch party in June, towards the end of June. So that'll be at Bullsmith's Tavern as well. And this is a, let's see, what kind of cool clue could we give? 86 Met and let's say a pitcher.
Okay. And not named Doc Gooden.
Not named Doc Gooden. So you can run through the rest of the list. But Doc's already been there. So not named Doc Gooden, 86 Mets pitcher, is going to do a watch party June 20th at Bullsmith Tavern. I'll let them make the formal announcement, you know, since they're the venue, as soon as they're ready to. But that'll be that one coming up. And like I said, we're also going to have Howie soon. I'm just going to work on a date with him to get him secured up for one.
And then that'll be a watch along as well with him.
That'll be a watch party as well. Yeah, that'll be a watch party as well.
A watch party. That's awesome. That's, you know, that's good. I mean, for the fans out there on the island, or even if you're traveling in from Brooklyn or
absolutely,
or anywhere, Staten Island, Connecticut. When we look at our analytics, you know, our top four markets are in New York, obviously number one, and then Jersey, Connecticut and Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So you know, the show is listened to. Our listeners in Vietnam and some of the other countries, when I look at our numbers, I'm like,
where did they come from?
They're people listening.
I think
everywhere.
One of the things to touch on with the watch parties is, you know, we kind of take for granted, like I'm saying, me and you and some others that are kind of around pro athletes and talk to them on a regular basis. We kind of take for granted what that is, and not everyone has that accessibility. So, you know, the accessibility of these guys, and that's what I think is so nice about them doing it, is just being there and just making themselves accessible to the fans to even just say hello, give them a memory of theirs, shake hands, take a picture. That's what I think I really like about the watch parties, is just, you know, again, we take for granted this access that we have, and not everyone has it, you know. 95% of the population doesn't. So just to be able to give that accessibility to fans for something cool like that, that's what's great about it as well.
Yeah. Well, you're doing so many wonderful things. And for fans out there, it's Coaches Collect, and that's Coaches, C-O-A-C-H-S, Collectibles, NewYork.com. It's only through email. There's no phone number or anything.
Nope.
You guys do all your business online.
yeah, website has a contact us if you ever have a question or something you can't find. But that gets right to my email, goes straight to my cell phone. I'm pretty diligent about getting back to people right away as fast as I can.
And your socials too. I mean,
my social medias. Yeah. We always say the fastest way to see something we're doing is on our social medias. I also run tons of specials on Instagram and Facebook all the time. So if you're following us, like the stories that go on, they go fast. You know, I have people that reach out and say, hey, I'm interested. I'm like, listen, be ready to buy when you see it. If it's still there, we have it. Because people, you know, we pop up some great sales and stuff on our stories. And if you're not following, you're not going to have access to that.
Yeah, we've been collaborating with you on some of the offers you made, you know, pretty much for the listeners and watchers of the Terry Collins Show. The World Series rings was
that's been great.
A recent one. We've had, you know, items by so many here already. And I know this week that you're putting together a nice offer with some David Wright stuff.
Yeah, we're going to do some cool David Wright stuff for this week. I'm going to pick some cool stuff out that we have and put together a nice little thing for you guys. And
as you're watching the show, probably Marsh will have a photo of what the offer is. And of course we put it up on our socials too.
Yep. Yep. We'll be ready for that.
Awesome. All right. Well, you know, it's always a pleasure. And I want to remind everybody because, you know, a lot of people have ordered stuff, but you got to use that promo code. It's TC Show.
All capital letters. Use it. That way we know it came from the show. We donate 10% of that sale price of everything, whatever you purchase, that whole total sale will go to the Tunnels to Tower Foundation. So it is important. Plus, you also get free shipping from it as well. So it is important that you use that code so that we can make sure that donation goes to the right place.
And make sure you go to CoachesCollectiblesNewYork.com for more information on all this stuff. And be sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook as well. So, Dom, once again, pleasure having you here. It's my always pleasure. Good to catch up with you, my friend.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you guys more than you know, and I look forward to it. We're going to have a turnaround season, and we're going to get it rocking.
We're going to have a good summer.
Yes, sir.
All righty. Thanks, Dom.
Thanks, guys.
Let's talk about next week's show. Terry Collins will have a special leadoff with New York Post Mets beat writer Mike Puma, who's never been on the show before, and he will be joining our correspondent from Baseball Night in New York as an analyst and the Newsday beat writer. And also she appears each and every home game in the fourth inning with Howie Rose. I'm talking about Laura Albanese. So Laura Albanese and Mike Puma on with TC and myself next week. We're also working on a couple of special guests to talk to Terry as well. So don't forget to subscribe to the Terry Collins Show on your favorite podcast platform or on our YouTube channel. Now, I would like to ask everybody out there who listens on Apple Podcasts especially, why don't you like that show? Like our show. Give us a review. That really helps with our analytics, and although a lot of people don't understand that, it really helps us out. So if you could like the show, if you listen on Apple, like it, give it a guys 4 or 5-star review, 5-star preferred on Apple Podcasts. And of course, our YouTube channel is growing as well. And we really would love for you to subscribe to the Terry Collins YouTube channel. There's so much content on there. Every one of the shows that we've recorded since the debut are there. We have short little clips. We have isolated clips of the interviews that we do. So Marsh, our creative director, does an incredible job. And we put content up there almost every single day. So go to YouTube.com, The Terry Collins Show, subscribe to it. And you'll also get notified when we have some new content on that platform. And this will wrap up this edition of the Terry Collins Show. Thanks to our creative director, as always, Marsh, for the incredible job that he does, and our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. Thanks for joining us, and have a great week, everyone.